The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vora. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. This week in libertarian politics has been unprecedented. And I'm not just talking about these record high poll numbers. I'm not talking about the volunteers and the donations. I'm talking about something very interesting that's happening, which is, for the first time, as far as I know in the party's history, we have not only Republican state legislators endorsing Gary Johnson, but now we have two congressmen endorsing Gary Johnson, breaking party ranks to do that. But with all that excitement happening, it's so important for us to remember that most of your interaction with government is not with the president. It's with the people in local government. Those are the people you actually talk to. Those are the people who can make your lives kind of like immediately better or, unfortunately, a lot of times immediately worse. With me right now, we're have somebody who's going to be running literally for the lowest office, the lowest office, but actually one of the most important type offices in there, because it's the one that you actually interact with, and this is where you're going to actually see what's going on, and that's where you see the interactions between your like laws and regulations and all these types of things that literally make the difference between a positive experience with government and a less positive experience with government. With me right now, we have Dennis. Dennis, how do you pronounce your last name? Real quick.
You can say Missigoy. As long as it's a hard D sound, you'll be okay. Missigoy, awesome. Depending on how you're saying it, it's fine.
All right. And he's running for the Enclave. Let me know if I have this right. The Enclave at Black Point Community Development District Seat 1. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. So a lot of areas in the country don't have specifically that position. So tell me, what is that position about? Like, those people do?
It's basically something that they do a lot in the state of Florida, which is they create these special taxing districts to essentially get out money for new developments. It ends up, I guess, for lack of a better term, sort of borrowing the money. Then it eventually becomes a tax on the people who ultimately move in there. This is something they usually do to start off development. And then the money ends up getting, they end up building these structures, and you have boards that oversee them, which then sort of mete out this money and can spend it, or hopefully let's try to not spend so much. And obviously it functions as a tax. I don't think they technically call it a tax, but it's still quite obviously a tax if you have to pay it. That then gets imposed on, like I said, all the residents in that area.
So it's literally it's something where it's like what you're saying is almost like a preemptive tax that you get taxed as a precondition of moving. Is that the idea?
It's how they sort of initially fund some of these developments, and then obviously that needs to get paid back through there. Money gets accumulated in there with what people pay, and then can get spent on some other things. And a lot of people get interesting ideas on how they can spend that money, and one of our goals is to try and put a stop to that as much as we can.
All right, and I think that's like so important. I mean, we see all these big, small, medium-sized taxes that are just so subtle and so buried. Of course, big companies, corporations, and all their lobbyists love that, but everyone else, finds it mostly annoying. I mean, you think about all these taxes that are bundled into the prices of things. If you want to know, you know, if you guys are listening, want to know how much more a thing costs than it should, compare a taxi versus Uber. It's the same basic thing, but Uber costs like about one third as much. I mean, that's the difference. Imagine right now that two thirds of everything you're paying is just taxes and BS. That's what's happening right now.
Go ahead. And that so much has to do with the you know, regulation in terms of even more than even just the tax. I think regulation and the cost of compliance with regulation so much so is designed to, you know, again, limit the competition, limit who can get in. So as an example, I like the taxi is a beautiful example because it's one I love to go to. You know, 100 years ago, somebody moves into the comes into the country, they buy a car, they write taxi on the side, and they go into business for themselves. Up until the rise of things like Uber, you know, maybe 10 years or so ago, you know, literally you could have a taxi medallion in a place like New York City literally going up for like $1 million. I mean, it's that absurd. So it's a great example.
Let's talk about what are some of the things that, if you get elected, what are some of the things that you're going to try to do? How are you going to fight? How are you going to fight it? Like, give me some of these ideas.
I mean, it's really there is about spending and about controlling it, making sure that there's push by some people I know already sort of involved there as part of the board for certain kinds of spending, essentially on things that wouldn't work. I'll go to essentially, you know, trying to build gates around communities, but they're built, but they're public roads, so you can't really block them. It's really just this sort of just for show kind of false sense of security type of action. But it's mainly about controlling spending. It's mainly about trying to control the spending, balance those numbers so that ultimately you can get rid of these kind of things so that you don't have these ongoing additional taxes for people who live in this area.
And I think that's really it's really important to pay it to, because here's the thing. If you look at the way that the news is structured right now, you know, more people know about that, you know, that Trump's wife's, you know, speech was very similar to Michelle Obama. People know about things like that, which has zero effect on anyone. I mean, it doesn't affect anybody at all. And they don't actually always even know, because there's not enough, there's barely any media attention given to these taxes that are actually affecting all of us.
Well, no, I'll even give you, and it goes even further than that, because I'm of the opinion that there's an active effort really to kind of obscure those things from people's sight. The example of the board, the body that I'm running for, the seat I'm running for, they typically meet in an area that, you know, halfway across the county from where it is from where it is the actual community is. Even though there's government buildings, you know, within a couple miles, they're like clear across. And Miami-Dade County, if you're not familiar with it, is one of the largest counties in the country. So it's really, particularly when you're talking about meetings that occur on weekdays, it's very difficult for the people, the average citizens in the area to be engaged. And I think a lot of that sort of thing happens on purpose. Some of it is people's disengagement, and that is something that people, if they want to be involved, obviously need to take a little more initiative to, but they certainly don't make it easy.
And you know, we see that. I mean, that particular trick we see just all over the country right now, where they'll schedule meetings at times that are extremely inconvenient, locations that are very difficult to get to. And I think you're right. I mean, they're trying to keep people – make it hard for them to find out the information that does matter, but Lord knows they're going to make it as easy as possible to find out about the information that doesn't matter. And I think that we're starting to fight that.
No, and absolutely. And one of the big things is transparency, and it's very difficult to achieve when you have that. You know, people, and this is also sort of symptomatic of just the modern lifestyle is, you know, we're all, you know, as they say, in the rat race, all running around trying to just make ends meet, pay our bills, get on with our lives. So it's very difficult. And the more difficult, the more that government does, and the more it does sort of in the shadows, I guess I can say, the more difficult it is for people to really be engaged, be aware. And if you're not engaged and aware, how are you going to take a position? How are you going to have any influence if you don't even know what's going on? And that's the hardest part, really, for everybody.
One of the things that I think is really exciting about a lot of these local races is that a lot of times you'll have, you know, we'll have like groups of people who make decisions that they're, you know, either a county level, state level, I can't remember the name. There was a huge initiative at the Libertarian Party in California several years ago. Uh, is Now, from what I understand, is this that part of what you guys are doing in Florida is having a lot of people try to run and get elected for some of these offices that are so critical.
Yeah. We actually made an initiative within the Miami-Dade County chapter of the Miami-Dade County affiliate of the Libertarian Party of Florida. Actually had what we called Operation CDD, which is we're going out there trying to get some of our members elected to some of these community development district seats. Like we say, it's some of the most local, some of the smallest units of government, I guess I could say. Mine in particular covers only about 240 homes. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about a really small area. So it can mm-hmm. have a really big, in terms of proportion, influence to those particular people, and they have a better chance to be heard with a group like that.
One of the
members of the party already got already technically elected because they ran unopposed for seats, and one who's also a councilman in northern part of Miami.
Wow, so literally what we're seeing is just by taking the initiative to show up, we're getting libertarians in positions where they can, I mean, they can work to actually cut government, work to get rid of regulations and things like that. I mean, is that about right?
That is what we're trying to do.
And that is just an amazing, I mean, that's just amazing that's happening, especially in, you know, Miami, which is both a very large and very big government heavy area. It's incredible to see the work that you guys are doing. Before we run out of time, I just want to make sure that I introduce the county website. And just to make sure I have this right, it's lpmiamiday.org. Is that correct?
Sounds about right. I know we had, and I apologize for not having it off the top of my head. I know we had some goings on with somebody else and a particular person who owned one of the domain names previously. But just take a look at what's updated there. I know that they recently revamped the site as part of an initiative also with the local chapter. So, if you don't see stuff up to date, I know there's a slightly different name, but I don't have it off the top of my head, and I apologize. Okay. But just search out there for Miami-Dade County Libertarian Party, and I'm sure you will find us.
Absolutely. All right, Dennis, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show with us today.
Thanks a lot.
Guys, we just finished talking with Dennis Misgoy. And here's what we're seeing. We're seeing that we have people who are there working to block government, to make sure that they're not able to rob you and just regulate businesses out of existence, to kill jobs, working to make sure that people have more disposable income, that you have more of your own money, that you have, you know, lower costs, that all that kind of stuff happens. Now, if you want to get involved with something like that, I mean, that's 240 homes. Don't tell me that you couldn't possibly knock on 240 doors. That's ridiculous. I mean, I could knock on 240 doors in basically a week or maybe less, and I'm sure you could too. Whether you run for a small office or a big office, you're going to bring that libertarian idea out to a lot of folks. And if you're ready to do that, please go to lp.org and learn about running for office as a libertarian. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We just finished talking with Dennis Misgoy, and we'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
If you are interested in real estate in America's largest city or anywhere, be sure to listen for Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco. Although our focus is on Manhattan and other real estate markets in and around New York City, we'll have plenty of information that will help you successfully buy, sell, and close a transaction no matter where you are in the world. Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. in New York, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com. This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vohra.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra. With me right now is Rob Lapham. He's running for Congress in Florida. We've had him on the show before, and today we're going to talk about cutting taxes, cutting spending, and we'll see where the conversation takes us. Rob, welcome to the show.
Hey, Arvind. Glad to be with you.
Let's talk a little bit about ways in which we can how can we hit the bottom line? Like, how can we make it so that people have more money to spend? They have more purchasing power. They can actually buy more things, service, education, spend more on charity, arts, whatever. How do we make that happen?
It has to be through the government taking less of our money. I mean, money does not come out of thin air, well, except the Federal Reserve. That's a separate topic. But when our money is taken from us, we have less to spend. If we want more to spend, less needs to be taken from us. And on that topic, I happened to be at a town hall in Panama City last night that the local TV station set up, and I plus three Republicans and two Democrats were the six folks that had questions asked of them. And one of them was, Rob, we don't understand your position on a proposed 60% cut in our military budget. Would you care to comment? And to provide a really short summary, I refer to our $600 billion budget that we spend on the military and postulated that at 60% reduction, we still would be spending $240 billion a year on our military, which is three times the amount the Russians spent. And I said, it doesn't work to just look at one department. Obviously, entitlements being a larger chunk of the budget needs to be reformed. Some federal government departments, such as the Department of Education, need to be cut out entirely. Others need to be scaled back significantly, such as the Environmental Protection Agency. In any case, we did not have the time to go down department by department as to what ought to be cut. But the bottom line is, and I, again, didn't have the time to throw it out there, but to put a specific number on it, and the Libertarian Party has done some studying on this, that if we were to adopt a budget, something along the lines of Bill Clinton's budget in his second year of his second term, 1998, the budget would be on the order of $1.65 trillion. And the average taxpayer, even under the current regressive IRS tax code, even under that, the average taxpayer would realize a savings of $11,500 and something every year in their taxes. So you ask the question, how do we put more money in folks' hands? There's one particular example that puts $11,500 in every taxpayer's hands, more than they have now.
And keep in mind, we're talking about the Democrat Bill Clinton. You know, Democratic Party is kind of more notorious for taxing and spending, although Lord knows the Republicans do it just as much. But we're saying that if we cut it to the level of Bill Clinton, if we reduce our spending to that, you know, fairly high level, we're going to end up with literally $11,000 saved per person. I mean, that's you know, mind-boggling when you think about it. We're literally paying $11,000 more right now than we would have if Bill Clinton was running the show. Or if, you know, if he'd been, you know, if we did like an immediate transport, maybe now he'd try to spend even more money. Who knows? Let me ask you this. What about the other side of it? I mean, what about the taxes that get buried into the price of things? What do we do about that? What could you do about that if you're elected?
Well, actually, under what I would propose advocating for as an elected representative for Congress, I like the fair tax. I don't know if we have time today to get into what the fair tax is and how it addresses the legitimate needs of folks who are below the poverty line. But implementing a tax like that together with, and it's a part of the deal, eliminating the Internal Revenue Service, there is no more federal income tax at that point, but you end up with this fair tax, which is a consumption tax. Now, in that event, everything we buy, every new something that we buy, is going to cost a lot more because it's basically a gigantic sales tax. But it's fair. It eliminates hundreds of millions of dollars of waste in compliance with tax codes. So folks like tax accountants and tax attorneys and so forth, many of them would have to find other means of employment. It would reduce the federal employees in the Washington, D.C. area who would experience a considerably higher unemployment rate. But it would be really good for the 2nd District and Congressional District in Florida, where we're sitting at 11-point-something% unemployment right now by the Department of Labor statistics versus about 5% nationally. It would be good, frankly, for most of the country. Guess I got off the topic a little bit, Arvin, but that's my answer.
One thing that I think is interesting when we look at, taxes, when we look at prices, look at all this kind of stuff, people, we say, there's that temptation to say, man, I hate paying these taxes, but at least I know that they're going towards something, something positive, something beneficial. So while I don't really want to have to pay them, I kind of guess, I guess at least it's doing some good. But my question is it actually doing some good? Is all that money that we're spending, is it doing good? Is it doing harm? Is it doing both? What is the story there?
those monies would be used far more effectively if the functions being performed were being performed by the private sector in almost all cases. I believe every single federal government agency is inefficient, and I'm not meaning to imply that the vast majority of federal workers try their best, do a good job. You've got a small bunch of folks who mess it up for everybody else, and you can't fire them, so that contributes to the inefficiency. But frankly, the only federal agency that I think operates or can operate reasonably effectively is the Department of Defense at a much smaller level than we have today. But if you define the military job as to break things and kill people, and that's its core mission, it does it very, very well, or it can if the generals are allowed to execute the plan. If you have a commander in chief who doesn't know what he's doing, that's a separate issue. But really, and of course, our military has been tasked with far more than that. So they get into road building and all kinds of activities is generally known as nation building, and they don't do that very well, and they shouldn't be tasked to do that. In any case, I do believe firmly that every single federal department performs tasks that are not only unconstitutional, they just are not the best. It's just not the best way to approach whatever the problem is. And you can name any particular federal department, and I'm pretty sure I can come up with something we ought to cut there. Not that I have all the answers, but there's tremendous inefficiency at federal government. And at the very least, almost all these functions, if they're not constitutionally supported, ought to devolve to state management and execution, because state governments are closer to the people and will be more reflective of what the public wants as the years go on.
Let's talk about what are the secondary effects? What happens, if tax are reduced, what are these secondary effects in terms of things like employment, quality of living, what happens after that?
Tremendous explosion in economic activity. Thousands, if not tens of thousands of businesses. More will start up. Existing businesses will hire more people. Today, the average small business person, there are any number of things. Some small businesses will not hire more than 50 people, for example, due to requirements for Obamacare. Other small businesses with economic uncertainty are not willing to invest in people, labor costs being the most, generally speaking, being the largest cost for any business is labor costs. And so you have tens of thousands of businesses that are not hiring more people because they do not have confidence in the future. So you build that confidence by reducing not just taxation, but also government regulation and businesses are going to hire more people. And therefore, unemployment will go down further. Folks that have given up and looking for work will start looking again, and the economic situation will improve considerably.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, and this is a point that I really want to make. When you look at the unemployment statistics put out by the government, it doesn't include the people who have just given up looking for work entirely. And so, I mean, that's like basically like saying you're not including the worst situation. We're just not even going to count that. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah, the government didn't used to count the Department of Labor did not used to calculate the unemployment rate the way they do today. And I wish I could recall when that changed. I do know, for example, when President Obama, in his first year in office and certainly on the campaign trail before then, was promising to bring the unemployment way down. And, of course, we look at it at today at 4.9%, and one view is, well, that's gone way down. The question is, when was the basis of calculation changed to make that number look better? And there is, I'm not saying it's necessarily just the Obama administration. Frankly, I do believe some of that goes back into the George W. Bush administration. But in any case, I don't believe our government tells us the truth or provides sufficient information to give real meaning to the numbers when they say, oh, the unemployment rate is 4.9%. There's a lot behind that that they don't tell you.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, if we are able to do these things, and I'm more hopeful now that we'll be able to actually do this than I've ever been before, you know, just seeing this huge explosion going on in the libertarian movement. That is making me think that this might actually be something that's going to be changing. You know, before long, I wouldn't be surprised if not only do people turn to private organizations for the things that government provides, that they also get statistics from private and reliable organizations, one that have an incentive to give you real information, not to just like fudge the numbers and give you these kind of nonsense answers. And I would obviously love to talk about that indefinitely. We're basically out of time. Rob, if somebody wants to learn more about your campaign, where should they go to follow you?
I'd appreciate anybody who is interested. Please go up on the web at www.robforcongress.org. And since I'm promoting that, I also would like to suggest to everybody that they send a letter to their local newspaper demanding that more exposure be given to Governor Gary Johnson. And we need to get Governor Johnson up to the 15% level so that he will appear in the presidential debates, and we'll have a real chance at making some improvements in the government of the United States.
Absolutely. Rob, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks, Irvin.
Guys, we just finished talking with Rob Lapham. He is running for Congress in Florida. And here's the thing. You've heard him say exactly what he's planning to do. And if you forgot what he said, you can look at his website. There's the pledges right there about what he's going to do. I've seen him with my own eyes. I've heard him on this show talk about that. And that's a thing that we should expect. When you hire anybody for any job, you expect them to tell you what they're going to do. Only in politics do we let people get away with it. It's time to start holding people's feet to the fire and demanding that they actually have some clear pledges. That's why I'm going to be voting libertarian all the way down the line. For any libertarian that signed some pledges, they have my support, they have my vote. And anybody who, you know, if you have Republicans or Democrats or even libertarians who will refuse to say what they're going to do, I'm going to be a lot more skeptical. If you want to learn more about libertarian candidates in your area, please go to lp.org. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you're listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
In the spirit of Have Couch, Will Travel, Dr. Carol Lieberman creates a haven of sanity in an increasingly insane world. Each day we are bombarded with news of events that have never crossed our wildest nightmares. Society is spiraling out of control and everyone is reeling from it. But now there's an answer. The best way to keep sane in this insane world is to tune in to Dr. Carol's Couch on Voice America. Dr. Carol, a certified media psychiatrist, will broadcast live from her Beverly Hills office every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific time. Call or log in and get help with whatever is sending you reeling whenever you need a soothing voice to calm and advise you. That's Dr. Carol's Couch every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific time here on America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com. This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I want to talk about the sheer just amount of money that's being wasted. It's just staggering. We are spending so much money. The government spends so much money that today, two people working together, husband and a wife working together, are struggling to do what one person could do 50 or 60 years ago. And it's not because technology has gotten worse over time. We're more productive. The problem is the government's wasting more money. With me right now is Nicholas Landholt. He's running for Congress in Texas, District 11. That's West Texas. And we're going to talk a little bit about cutting taxes and cutting spending. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Arvin. Glad to be here.
Let's talk about I don't even know where to start. There's so much cutting that we can do. If you were going to start talking about where to cut spending, where to cut taxes, where would you begin?
Well, I'd start with the what's called the income tax. That's kind of my key issue, or one of my top three issues.
Okay.
I have a link on my Facebook page, Landholt for Congress. Mm-hmm. It says, the title is kind of provocative, says most Americans do not owe income taxes.
Okay.
And what it's about is basically what I found out 20 years ago is that the income tax is misapplied. I mean, you can go into the issue of the fact that the 16th Amendment was never legally ratified, but just the misapplication of the income tax is the key.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this. There's income tax, but there's so many taxes that are sometimes buried in other areas, hidden
sure.
taxes. What areas of – I mean, it seems to me that as long as we allow spending to be maintained at this current just unbelievable level, that they're going to find some direct or indirect or whatever ways that – what areas of – what about spending? What parts of spending can we reduce?
Well, the property taxes is another issue. The natural right is for man to have own property, and we don't. I mean, mm-hmm. as long as you're having to pay income taxes, whether you're supporting or not supporting public school system, I mean, how many people don't have children, but they still have to pay property taxes because the old taxation is theft. I mean, that's certainly apropos here as well. Sales taxes, the key is to get people who are anti-tax into office. So you have to organize and stop feeding the beast, as they say.
There's two things that the government does that's annoying, but I think the first thing that they do is they do something that's like kind of useful, but they do it, either they do it inefficiently or overly expensively or in some way wrong. So to me, that's something like education. I think that education is good. I think that public
certainly.
Schools are a disaster.
Certainly, yes.
And so I would certainly like to see that. That's something that I would like to see done privately, done outside of the government. But then
right.
there's certain things. Go ahead.
Well, the free market. I mean, let's privatize as long as we continue to feed government, it's going to and allow them to pass laws that increase taxes, they're going to they're not going to stop. So it's up to we the people to make them stop, and then turn it over to the private sector.
The one of the big issues, one of the big parts of it, though, there's the second aspect that I want to get at for a second, which is sometimes it's, sometimes they're doing something that would theoretically be useful, but they're just maybe not doing it very well. And you want somebody in the private sector, the free market, to be doing that. That to me, that's something like education. But then there's sometimes where the government is does things where I just wouldn't want anyone to do those things at all. I just wouldn't want – I wouldn't want it done privately. I wouldn't want it done publicly. I just wouldn't want it done. I would pay more to have people not do it. I mean, for you, are there areas of government spending that you view as just actually harmful spending?
Well, I mean, the role of government is to protect rights. It's not to produce something, not to produce jobs. It's not to tax us so that they can be harmful in financing whatever it is they want to finance. So you can almost look at anything that government spends money on and eliminate it. For example, a big issue of mine is the Second Amendment and the state, the well-regulated militias. I'm putting out there that militia can replace local police force, and that'll save taxes. But no one seems to want to hear that.
Now let's talk a little bit about some of these. I mean, I want to. It's such a complex issue. There's so many directions I want to look at it from.
Sure.
Let's talk about. I mean, do you think that there's areas in which the police is enforcing laws that are just like unnecessary to be enforced in the first place?
Oh, certainly. The whole war on drugs issue. I mean, I'm for decriminalizing drugs. And that way the police aren't always, you know, stopping people or spending tax money on investigations or what's the word, where they're trying to find out if somebody, somebody is doing drugs or what have you, plus all the money that would be saved by not putting people into jail for nonviolent crimes. I mean, that's a huge savings.
You know, I saw a very interesting article just a few weeks ago, and the author was basically arguing that instead of having the police do all those things that you said, that they, which are, you know, wasteful and intrusive and annoying and expensive and not really benefiting any particular person, that instead of the police acting like that, his argument was that the police should act the way the fire department does. If there's a fire, you call the fire department and they come and help you out. And if there is no fire, then the fire department doesn't do anything.
Right. I mean, if there's no crime, you don't call the police aren't, you know, going around looking for crime.
And then
wait
until
it happens.
And that's the thing. I mean, most people are mostly – there's not as much – legitimate crime going on as the amount of police resources that we're putting at it. So that creates a situation where they're just like looking for crimes, looking for things to call crimes.
Yes.
You know, let's make this thing a crime, even though there's no logical reason for it to be a crime.
Oh, well, right. They're passing laws that make something a crime, such as, you know, smoking a marijuana cigarette. And they go around looking for it. And a lot of these police, what I call police state actions, are a result of drug crimes, which shouldn't be a crime. I mean, we can't make everything a crime, and that's almost what the advancing police state is trying to do, to justify their existence.
And it's no surprise that we have the police unions and prison guard unions that are at this point like the only people in support of a lot of these things.
Sure.
And it's not even all. I mean, you have like organizations like LEAP, that's Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, that are growing and they're fighting. They're the they're police officers that are saying, listen, when I want to be a police officer, I want to actually protect people. I want to protect and serve, not be invasive and intrusive and annoy.
Well, and the media is focusing on the bad cops instead of the good cops.
Mm-hmm.
And because they want, I mean, to me, the enemy of the people is the media. They are trying to incite, whether it's racial incidents or police incidents, and it's the media needs to be exposed as well. But unless we get more local and understand that, I mean, militia were local people. They knew each other. They met regularly. And they knew what was a problem and what was not.
And that, I think, is really the key. I mean, we've seen this, like, just total misuse of that. We've seen this great separation between the, you know, the police and the people. And I think that you have a really good point, which is that if we take the government out of a lot of these areas, if we legalize a lot of these things, decriminalize a lot of these things, we're going to end up with a much more harmonious and effective and efficient system that's going to benefit pretty much everybody.
Well, exactly. I mean, people will come together. I mean, there's incidents out there where I've seen blacks and whites coming together because, again, it's a media-driven situation to where they have an agenda. And I can't, you know, go into it now. You know, people can check out my Facebook page. But people act like if we decriminalize drugs, that everyone's going to start smoking pot or doing heroin or whatever, and that is just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. Let me ask you this: if somebody wants to learn more about your campaign, if they want to, you know, if they want to follow your campaign, what's the best place for them to do that?
Well, best to call me, but I've also got a Twitter and, as I said, Facebook. My personal number; they can leave a message on how to get back to them. At 432-934-6338. Again, that's 432, that's a West Texas area code, 934-6338, and leave a message. My Twitter is at Landholt2016, and my Facebook is Landholt for Congress. That's L-A-N-D-H-O-L-T, Landholt for Congress.
Awesome. All right, Nick, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
Well, you're welcome. Appreciate you having me.
Guys, I just finished talking with Nicholas Landholt. He's running for U.S. Congress in House District 11. That's West Texas. And if you want to learn more about him, or you want to learn more, in fact, if you want to just learn more about all the candidates, go to lp.org, and you can learn about what candidates are working in either your state or in your favorite state or in your neighboring state, and you can see where you might want to get involved. That's the great thing. We have competition between candidates even. You can get involved with any Libertarian candidate or any group of Libertarian candidates you want. In fact, even I am personally involved with more than one campaign, so I hope that many of you guys will see just how exciting it can be to just be involved with a lot of these different great movements. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We just finished talking with Nicholas Landholt. He's running for Congress in House District 11 in Texas. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Psych Up Live with host Dr. Suzanne Phillips is an insider's glimpse at a life from a psychological perspective. It's a look at what matters to us. Why do we laugh? How do we cope with stress? Are men and women really that different? What is it about our relationships? How are they formed? How they work out? And why they sometimes don't? Every week is something new to engage you. Psych Up Live is heard every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll turn up your perspective on life.
Being Here with Ariel and Shia Kane is an ordinary person's guide to modern-day enlightenment. This show is an exciting exploration which opens the door to living in the moment. Don't miss Being Here. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern with Ariel and Shia Kane right here on the Seventh Wave Network.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. Of the many industries in America, one that has the highest turnover is telemarketing. It's not because it doesn't pay well. It's because people get tired of being yelled at and hung up on and mistreated when they're doing telemarketing. Turnover rates are over 100% a month. I mean, it's really ridiculous. And we know it's not because of the fees, because there's, you know, this invention that came out, which is basically a thing where the telemarketers, instead of talking themselves, just like push buttons that have pre-recorded responses. So when you say, I don't really have time, they push a button and then they have a recorded voice that says, like, you know, I know you don't have much time, but yeah, this is really important. Now, the reason I bring this up is in our heads, we like to think that telemarketers, because they're doing business, they can't be affected emotionally. They're emotionally unaffectable. But in reality, even somebody who's getting paid to do this, if they're attacked enough, will give up. People can, even the people who you believe cannot be emotionally affected, cannot be emotionally reached, I promise you they can. And this is something that I've been learning during this campaign season. Not negatively, but positively. I've been seeing that a lot of the people that you know, when I would post things on Facebook, I just figured that people who already agree with me liked it and other people just ignored it. What I've been seeing is I'm hearing so many people say, you know, you might not remember me, but you spoke at this one area and because of that, I decided to get involved and I'm running for as a libertarian. We're seeing, you know, things that are just politically, it's hard when you don't spend all your time in politics to understand how big a deal it is when so far, and we're not even in November yet, so far two Republican congressmen have already endorsed Gary Johnson. It's impossible to imagine how big a deal that is. Here's why. When you endorse someone who's not your party as a congressman, you're going to expect backlash. You're going to get backlash in committees. You're going to get backlash everywhere. You're going to be thrown off committees. This has happened many, many times. You're not expecting to get any rewards, any major rewards, because quite frankly, the Libertarian Party, we have fewer congressmen than the Republican Party does. We have less money than the Republican Party does. So why would some rational being do this? Well, here's the thing. This isn't about rational beings. This is about people realizing that below pragmatism, beneath like this practical logic says that I have to get as much money and votes as possible, all of us have an actual humanity inside of us. We all have that morality. And even if we become so mercenary, even if we're involved in like the dirtiest of politics, or even if we're involved in something that's purely mercenary, there's always that part of every single person. I promise you, there's that part of every single person that knows the difference between right and wrong and wants to do right. See, that part's in every single person. Now, sometimes people say they're afraid to do right, or they're just too tired to do right, or it's not as profitable to do right. But there's some part of every person that wants to do right. Every day on Facebook, for example, the Libertarian Party reaches hundreds of thousands of people. But when you combine that with all the mainstream media and national outreach, literally we are reaching millions of people every single day. And if each of us continues and puts more and more pressure on that, that's actually going to lead to changes. I know that sometimes libertarian activism feels like you're just literally standing in front of a brick wall and yelling. But here's the thing. If you yell long enough in front of a brick wall, whoever's on the other side is eventually going to hear it. And if that doesn't work, maybe the sound waves will knock that wall down. Just today, my own campaign, my Senate campaign, has gotten responses from people who want to volunteer that I didn't even know were libertarians, largely because I don't think they even knew they were libertarians until relatively recently. You're often going to find yourself in social situations in which every single person around you is a hardcore Republican or a hardcore Democrat. And you're going to feel this temptation to just go along with it. Maybe there's somebody in there that you're trying to impress for some reason. Maybe you just don't feel like making waves. But my very strong advice is to first go to lp.org, learn some of the arguments, or go to Mises, learn some of the arguments, or go to Cato, learn some of the arguments, and then wherever you are, politely bring those arguments up. You don't have to be angry about it. Remember, you might be the first libertarian that a person ever meets, so you don't have to be angry about it. You can be polite about it, but you should politely bring those things up. Sometimes the last people in the world that you would ever expect to listen to you will actually be the ones that'll listen. Not too long ago, my dad, who has, my dad's been a Democrat his entire life. Not too long ago, just a few weeks ago, my dad told me that for the first time in his life, he's going to vote for a libertarian. He's going to vote for Gary Johnson. I hope he's also going to vote for me. Maybe he'll vote for two libertarians, but he's definitely going to vote for Gary Johnson. Now that's somebody who I would never have ever thought would vote for libertarian. Never in a million, billion years. Just the idea would, and to say that I argue with him politely on it is maybe not true. Maybe that's an exception where sometimes if it's with your own parents, it might be a little harder to stay polite the whole time. But that's somebody's going to be voting for Gary Johnson. I've talked to so many people who I went to high school with that I would never have guessed were libertarian, or maybe they never would have guessed that they were libertarian, contacted me saying, listen, I'm so excited, I'm going to be voting for Gary Johnson this year. So many people are voting for libertarians. So many people are planning to vote for Gary Johnson. But the biggest type of outreach that you can do, I mean, of course, that family outreach, that friend outreach, it's so important. Because some of your friends, you know what? I bet you have at least one friend that's not on Facebook. I bet you have at least one friend that doesn't watch TV. In fact, I bet you have at least one friend that neither watches TV nor uses Facebook. And the only way for the libertarian movement to reach that person is you. You are the only way we can reach that person. We have no other way. It's you or nothing. But one of the most amazing ways that you can reach people is by running for office. And I know it sounds kind of crazy. Like, what do I know about running for office? Well, I don't know. Probably not very much. But what do you know about government? I bet you know that you want less of it. And if you can stand up in front of a group of people and just say, I want to cut government in these ways. If you can look at the Libertarian Party pledges and look at them and say, like, you know what? I agree with these. I'm comfortable signing this one and this one and this one. Yeah, by all means. If 1,000 more of us do that this year, 1,000 more people sign those pledges, that sends the mainstream media message, it sends the Republican Party a message, it sends the Democratic Party a message, it sends all these voters a message that there are people who are here looking to cut government. The other great thing, and this is where when you're in politics, you got to play chess, not checkers. You got to really think about things strategically, not just by just brute force. When you run for office, here's something weird. Even if you have no chance of winning, even if you don't have a big name, even if you're running in the most and the tightest race in the history in the world ever, you're still going to get a lot of media coverage. Tens of thousands of dollars worth of media coverage, maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of media coverage, depending on the race. And that means you're going to be able to put essentially an ad for liberty into the Washington Post, the New York Times, your local newspaper, your local college newspaper. You're going to be able to put that ad out there, that message out there that says, listen, here's why ending the drug war is good. Here's why eliminating the income tax is good. Here's why repealing the Patriot Act is good. That can happen just by running for office, just by running. Now, I'm not even talking about winning yet. I'm saying just by running, you're creating this. And if you win, of course, you can make history and you can make changes. You can reduce the size, the scope, the power of government to increase the size, the scope, and the power of the individual. If you're ready to do that, please go to lp.org/states. See what it takes to get involved in the Libertarian Party in your state. It's really easy to do. You just contact the state party, and they'll, you know, if it's a very big state, you'll get directed to a local affiliate. If you live in a small state, you'll just go ahead and join up with the state party as a whole. It's an amazing experience. I could not recommend it more highly. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm your host, Arvind Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvind Vora again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.